Have you enjoyed listening to Travel and Shit? Well, then consider becoming a subscriber. Beginning December 1st, you can support the work I've been doing to get you an episode each week and get exclusive access to all episodes 1 week early. Beginning December 1st, exclusive early access will be given to subscribers. I'd love to give you first listen. Consider supporting the show and becoming a subscriber. For more info, go to travelandshitpodcast.com/subscribe. I made it around the world and came back with stories to tell. Different places to call home. Now I'm never on my own. Salutations to my people hitting foreign nations. Food, traveling, shit, moving to live. Life in the sky, stories to give. The ones who make it there and can make it back. Salutations and shit, folks. Welcome back to another episode of your favorite travel podcast, Travel and Shit, where I, your host, T. Carrie, have an experiential conversation about the nuanced ways that travel intersects with regular life. And every time I think about what I'm saying, I fuck it up. So I gotta just not think about it anymore. It's one of those things. It's a favorite D quote of mine. If you don't think about it, it makes sense. So welcome back to a new episode. I'm happy to have you here. Been looking forward to this one for a while. I'm going to dive right in. If you're watching on the YouTubes, you already know that I have a gorgeous guest with me. So gorgeous guest, if you would introduce yourself.
Oh, thank you, Dikari. Thank you for having me. My name is Ken, and I'm the host of By the Fire podcast, where I talk about mythology, spirituality, religions from across the Black diaspora.
Thank you. Y'all already know. I'm so glad you are here. So thank you for joining me. If y'all have listened to the podcast before, you know that this is a very Blacky Black ass show. I love all things Black. And one of my favorite things to do when I travel is to look into Black history anywhere I go. So a lot of places have had quite the surprising, one of the first places that I went where I was surprised to find Black history was Costa Rica. I've never in my life knowingly met a Black Costa Rican. Went to the museum in Costa Rica because I know what else to fucking do. And this museum, I love a good museum. I read the placards. I actually enjoy the information. History happened to have been one of my favorite subjects, along with science. And I was so surprised to see that there was so much Black history in Costa Rica. There are Black Costa Ricans, as our past lovely, incredible guest, Sadie Jordan of Soul Life Travel, actually gave us more information on. So Costa Rica was that first place. I ended up going to Guadeloupe and doing a Black history tour. And it's not like, and Black, it's the beautiful thing about Black is that it encompasses the diaspora. We're fucking everywhere. We are everywhere you go. It's just a matter of whether or not you know to look for the history. And the sad thing about Black history in different places is that the onus is on you to find that information. It is not often readily accessible. It's not something that you can just go to Expedia and you're going to find six different options of a tour or a destination or a placard to find what you're looking for. Also a note, that's one of the things that Sadie is very passionate about, is taking the work out of her clients' mental gymnastics. Like she does work for you. She helps you make sure that you are eating at Black establishments, you're shopping for Black vendors. If you want to do a Blackity Black trip, a lot of times it takes you the work to Google Black restaurants, Google Black housing options, Google Black activity options, and a lot of places, such as Sadie, will take care of that for you. And one of the things in these places, in these communities, and in these locations, while they may be difficult for us to find, is nestled right there is the culture of the people of the place that you are visiting. And the culture of the people wherever you go, Black culture, green culture, culture, yellow, in between, a lot of culture is preserved through storytelling. And that is very, very strongly why I wanted Ken on the podcast to have this conversation with me, because she does such an incredible job of storytelling on her podcast, By the Fire. And I really love how you have transitioned through the different ways that you formulate the podcast, where initially you started by just telling the stories of different Black cultures. And I'll let you speak to that in a second, of different Black cultures throughout the diaspora, what their stories are, and how storytelling is important by now using those creatures that you look up and telling your own stories. And it was, I had mentioned it to you before, the kind of aha click was, my brain just works in a way that I understand, so I don't know if this will make sense to many of you, but there are a lot of different little pieces that seem like they are not connected, but somehow my brain connects them and then it like all makes sense, but trying to communicate that can get a little rocky. So appreciate y'all for always following along with me. But we were driving, and I was mentioning this to you when we first spoke, Ken, that boyfriend and I were driving. I don't remember what road trip it was. I believe it was on our way to our first stop of Cleveland. And we were passing through someplace, and I looked to the right, and there's a huge cutout of Bigfoot in front of this motel. And so I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like, different regions have different local lore. The communities, the people of different areas, Black, white, and anything in between, have their stories that they communicate and they tell each other to pass on, like it's based on a true story, or has its connection.
Your internet's saying no today. She's saying no.
Yeah, the girls are the girls are girling. Do you remember where you last heard me say, like, what the last thing I said was? All right.
You spoke to me about something on our first meet, not today. Was it last week? Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Bigfoot. It was 8 minute mark. Let me see if I can just join my personal hotspot on my, and like use my phone service and not, because I feel like my phone is not, okay. I made that change. Okay, so hopefully this will hold on. And so fuck Verizon right now. We're going to roll with AT&T. All right. So 8 to 8:47, we'll have him figure that out. So one of the things that I noticed on our, one of our last road trips, I believe we were on our way to Cleveland, Detroit, that general area. I looked up while we were driving, and all of a sudden there's this huge cutout of fucking Bigfoot in front of a motel. And I remembered, right, there are different local lores, local regions. I'm a big fan of Supernatural. Supernatural is my shit, one of my favorite shows. And throughout the different, all 15 seasons, they just drive around the United States and they kill monsters. And a lot of those monsters are actually based on local lore, like Wendigo. And I am not going to sit and try to think of other ones, but Wendigo was the first episode, so that's always the first thing that comes to mind. But a lot of them are based on just stories, like A Woman in White, stories that are centrally located, and they kind of don't come out of that little sphere of influence. And Bigfoot is not exactly a very hyper-regional, but I know that it's, I don't think that it is a global thing. I know it's not a global thing, but a lot of different places have like a Bigfoot similar kind of lore. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at this big nigga on the big cutout, and I'm like, oh, people have their different things. I want, like, people also travel for things like this. People travel for the chance sighting, and they buy all this equipment, and they buy all these pieces of gear that are supposed to help them. And then they'll go to these places and search it out. But we also have our own stories. We also have Black stories. And October happens to be Hoodoo Heritage Month. I am very unfamiliar with Hoodoo as it stands, which is very, I don't know what the correct word, maybe I'll say curious, because through just random tweets, right? because this was all new to me as of this year. I just started using Twitter a little bit more as of the last year, just because I prefer it. You just consume the content as opposed to having to interact, right? Social media is at this stage where content is king. I don't want to really make shit. I just want to enjoy the shit other people do. The podcast is enough. So I'm scrolling through and looking at all the different things that are pretty much included or encapsulated in Hoodoo. And I didn't realize that a lot of these things were things that I've been taught growing up, because Hoodoo, let me pull up the definition I have here. Hoodoo, also known as root work, is Black American folk magic forged in the South, but derived from various West African cosmologies. Unlike voodoo, a formalized combination of Catholicism and ancestral African spiritualities, hence its popularity in Haiti and New Orleans, hoodoo is not a religion. So it's a spiritual practice, right? And that was from actually a really nice piece written on christiancentury.org. I cannot remember the young lady's name, but I really enjoyed the piece that she wrote. But not putting your bag on the floor. What were the other ones? There are a lot of just regular shit that American Blacks that we tell each other, don't split the pole, don't put a hat on the bed. A lot of things that we've been told superstitiously, like little, so don't sweep your feet, or you're not going to get married, or a lot of these things that we have been told apparently are part of the practice of hoodoo. I didn't necessarily know that hoodoo was root work or Black magic either. There are so many little things about our own culture that are still very nuanced as well as unknown. Yeah. Like a lot of things that you understand don't necessarily have the connection to culture or spirituality. They just happen. Mm. They're just things. They're just, you know, experiences or pieces. Exactly. Mm. It's just what you know, or things that are just existing and you don't realize that there's actually a reason for it. And a lot of storytelling that is passed on through communities in anybody's culture have that same basis. The story is not just the story. The story is there for a reason. The story comes from something grander and larger and, you know, is shared with us for those particular reasons. So that's how we got here, right? All of those little pieces came together in my mind. And I'd been following Ken for a while and I'm like, boom, duh, reach out. This can absolutely work. So Ken, please tell us more about your podcast. What exactly you focus on generally and why you do what you do.
Okay, so like I said, my podcast is By the Fire, and the reason why I started the podcast was because I was listening to another one, and I think it's always good to, you know, people say the best authors read, and you can tell when an author doesn't read. So similarly with the podcast, I was listening to one that I really enjoyed, and I noticed this podcast, I won't say the name, but they talked about literature. One person is an author, I believe. The other is a game developer. Mm-hmm. And they factor in, they're both game devs, sorry. And they factor in literature that they've read into their work. And I noticed that they had a lot of information about, you know, European law. They actually both live in my local area. And in the UK, and Asian as well. And I thought, oh, now wait a minute, first of all, where's Africa?
Yeah.
And Africa's a huge, huge continent. Dare I say the biggest? And I thought, that's a problem. Where's the Caribbean religions? Where are African American as well? Which, even I've been doing this for 2 years now, it's still like difficult to find written information. And I get a lot of my stuff from people who say, you tweet things, you comment. And I just thought, okay, now instead of me just sitting down complaining about it, let me be the one to say, to start this podcast. You know, I've never really been someone who was super into spirituality. I'm Christian myself, but I just thought, you know what, this is sort of the start of a cultural experience journey that I would like to go through. I've always been pro-Black in the sense of wanted to know more about, you know, where I'm from, but also enriching and showcasing the wonderness, but also just the normality of being Black. And part of that is our like storytelling. And I just said, yeah, let me just start with this. And like you mentioned, I started with finding information online, sourcing them, and basically talking the way I am, which is giving out the information that I saw based on who they are, where's it from, why this creature was made. But then recently I was having a chat with my boyfriend and he suggested, you know, why don't you like make these stories yourself? Because, and actually this actually feeds into a point that I saw on Twitter, which is a lot of these books are not written by Black people, so Black people don't actually benefit from the information that they're that's been given out about their own self, their own culture. Right. And I thought, oh yeah, and I haven't written in a while, but I thought, yeah, why not? I mean, it's called By the Fire podcast, you know, the icon is a Black figure sitting by the fire, and the whole premise of that is, you know, we're by the fire, by the campsite, listening to stories. And this is how it was back in the day. Now someone, an elder figure that you admire, I think there's actually a term for storytellers.
I know that's one. Let me see if there's another one. Did you guys have Nickelodeon in the UK? Yes. Okay, yeah. So did you guys, I don't know how far off in age we are, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Where they would, the Midnight Society, they would pop up around. So there was this show called Are You Afraid of the Dark? And it was a bunch of kids, diverse, one Black, I think. And they would sit around a campfire and tell each other scary stories. And this was like peak preteen, early adolescence. And they were kind of like how Goosebumps and Fear Street, it was that whole genre of scary storytelling that, depending on the story, the shit actually was scary. And then also depending on how old you are, the way, who told the story, how, like, Are You Afraid of the Dark was a cult. It's a cultural icon for us here in the States. And I was curious if you guys had it out there. And that's when you were talking about By the Fire and sitting by the campfire, that that show immediately came to mind.
No, exactly. And, you know, I think you actually had people who would go, you know, you did actually have people who'd go around to different communities, to different neighborhoods, telling stories of what they've seen in the previous one. Like, there wasn't really, I think that they were basically the retweeters of like medieval era, where they would go around and say, oh yes, this is what I saw before. And I say medieval era, but I mean, I'm talking about regionally in Nigeria and other countries as well. And I think that's where, you know, the whole phrase, you know, what's up comes from, like, you know, what's happening. I think as well, like Wagwan is like, you know, what's going on, and like, you know, what is happening, what have you heard that you want to share with us? And that we have that now with social media in the status page, the questions tends to be like, you know, what's happening, what's going on, because it's something that you have something to say and you need to share it with others. And
especially the sorry for interrupting you, the global nature of social media. It's just that you get that perspective, like, we don't have to leave, we don't have to go on a journey to tell another village or another community what's going on in ours. We just log in, you know what I mean? Log in, talk your shit, and it's like, now it's everywhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, now it's amazing, like, you have people who are proud to say, I just go on social media as a diary, I don't want people to reply, like, this is like, and now we can actually choose who can reply. So it's very much like people who are, you know, doomsayers in the street saying, you know, the end of the world is here, and people just walking
Chicken
past.
Littles of it all.
Yeah,
like, we all know that story, you know.
Yeah, and it's really amazing what I've been able to do with the podcast now, and I've met like great people such as yourself, and yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
So what have been some of the stories that you have shared? What are some of your favorite, and what region, where are you from? What is your, I guess your nation, your nation of origin? Is that the way you would question it?
Like, it would be, yeah, my ethnic background. Yeah.
Okay.
My ethnicity is Nigerian.
Okay.
But I was born, my nationality, I was born and raised in England, in the UK.
Okay.
So I'm first generation immigrant. Well, I was born from my mum came over in 94 from Nigeria. Okay. So yeah, that's where I'm from.
According to 23andMe, I too am Nigerian. So
let's go.
What's going on, cuz?
Naja, babe. That's right. That's right. No, gosh, we're everywhere.
It's- yeah, sure the shit is. Thank you, no. Transatlantic slave trade. Thank you for leaving us everywhere in all the places. Oh, Lord. And that was another carrier of stories. And that's how a lot of it ended up here in the States, is that a lot of Africans being displaced and taken from their homes were not allowed to practice and speak their own dialect, their own languages, and they weren't allowed to keep a lot of their same practices. And so being forced to practice Christianity and different variations of it wherever they ended up, they infused their own culture into a lot of Christianity. And that's how you got a lot of the different Black spiritual practices and religions that we practice and see across the diaspora now. But in terms of the stories that you've shared, back to you, girl.
I mean, so for example, I've shared one called Lagahu, which I actually found out is also present. The original story that I shared on the podcast was from Trinidad and Tobago, so one of the islands in the Caribbean. And that creature, who's a werewolf, who basically might be an Obeah man or like a normal person in the neighborhood, and what he has is a coffin, a chained to him at night. And it seems the background is that he sold his soul to the devil to be able to commit crime without getting caught.
So
his cross to bear, his punishment, is having these coffins just dragged behind him all night, so he doesn't know peace. Basically, he's asleep. But what I discovered, like whilst researching for this podcast, is that he's also present in Louisiana, like in in the South folklore. But he's called Rougarou. I don't know.
Okay, I've heard of Rougarou. Yeah, I've absolutely heard of Rougarou. Yeah. That was another supernatural one.
Like, amazing. Like he's a werewolf, like, you know, he haunts the bayous, the swamps of Southeast Louisiana. There's a spell as well that of the Rougarou that lasts about 101 days. And I just thought, that's what I love about the folklore, which, like you said before, it's everywhere and it moves from different places. So the fact that it came from Trinidad Tobago but ended up in the USA with different names, this isn't the first time it's happened. There's been other occasions where I've said about this story about this person and then someone says, oh yeah, we have that in Tanzania too, and we have that, but we also somehow have it in Jamaica as well. And I think that is what spins me about doing this podcast, is that this shit is everywhere. This is in different areas. Like, this isn't just one particular region. Like you were saying before, there are some that are definitely fixed in regions, and I actually did have trouble and I had to reach out, and still it was quite difficult finding Black folklore from the northern states. A lot of their folklore tends to be just white or native. I wonder why that is. I know a lot of people, there was a great migration that happened where a lot of Southerners moved to the north. Right. But I think because was there not like an establishment of Black people in the north, that it's quite difficult to find northern Black mythology.
First of all, what popped up for me was, so I was writing down Rougarou and it fucking auto-corrected for me. So even Apple acknowledges Rougarou is a motherfucking thing. So it's spelled so that you too can Google R-O-U-G-A, because I can't see, R-O-U-G-A-R-U-U. Put that in your Googles. And there's an entire wiki page that there is quite the amount of information. And it goes, the Rougarou, according to Wikipedia, the Rougarou is a legendary creature in French communities like, I'd have to open that up. Here we go. French communities linked to traditional concepts of the werewolf. Mm. Yeah. And it's saying, what is the Rougarou in Louisiana? What is the Rougarou in New Orleans? How do you become a Rougarou? What does Rougarou mean in French? History of the Rougarou, Louisiana's werewolf, Rougarou. It's one of those tongue twisters, y'all. Bear with me. Rougarou, Monster Wiki fandom. Like, it's a motherfucking thing. There's an A&E piece from 2012, Save the Swamp, but beware the Rougarou. That, not, those two things aren't the same. That's not, I mean, the piece from 2012. Like,
yeah, I mean, the original word, because it comes from the French word, Lougarou. And again, I'm not French. I've got a French friend who would probably like beat my ass for this, but yes, it comes from the French loup-garou, which means werewolf. So these sort of remixes of this original word, you have lagau, which is what it's called in Trinidad and Tobago, then you have rougarou, which is in Louisiana, and it's just, yeah, that really fascinates me, and it's very interesting because you actually hear this werewolf before you see it, because you hear the chains it's dragging. Ooh. So if you're in the forest, if you're in the swamp, in the bayous, if you hear these chains first, you know that's what it is. Oh goodness, yeah. And it's interesting because in order to actually see him properly, you have to put the mucus of a dog's eye into your own eye and look through your keyhole at midnight.
That's a lot of steps. What if you're already in the bayou? You know what I mean? What if I'm outside? Where do I get a keyhole?
Oh my god.
But that's kind of like in Supernatural. In order for them to see hellhounds, they have to basically bless a pair of glasses. You put on a pair of glasses, you pour like holy oil on them or some shit like that. And that's what allows you to see a hellhound. So there's even like steps to that. And partial step back, cryptozoology is an actual thing. It is the study of kind of mythological and unknown creatures, if you will. And cryptozoologists would look into things like the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot. And what is really cool about cryptozoology is that it seems very fantastical and just like it's just a bunch of crazy white folks just looking for just stupidness. However, it also kind of relates itself back to undiscovered species. Consider the world as the fucking world, right? Just because we don't know about something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. There is so much of our oceans that just have not been explored. There's so much of the world, the global planet as itself, Mother Earth, that we as people do not have a grasp on. We're still finding new species. So if you really want to think about it, the really freaky, scary part about it is that a lot of things that we think of as mythological, as fairy tale, and as completely make-believe could possibly, and the point of cryptozoology is to kind of, could possibly be real. It's just that we don't know about it. And a lot of people take the shit serious. You do have your quacks and your ones that are maybe a little bit off balance, but if you do the research and you do the studying and you look at what different people experiences, it's all so fascinating to me that a lot of stuff in the world is just not explained. We don't fucking know. So as crazy as some of these stories sound, if you think about the way communities and cultures use storytelling as cautionary fables, right? Like Aesop's fables. I'm familiar, shout out to mom, a lot of different African fables like Mufaro's Beautiful Daughters, Cowtail Switch, Why Mosquitoes Buzz in People's Ears, Anansi the Spider. There are a ton of different stories that, while they seem like things you just tell kids to keep them in line, or while you just tell people to scare them or to keep them away from peoples, a lot of times they have a basis in an actual factual occurrence or not occurrence, or like a warning or like cautionary tale to keep people safe. And I know that you had mentioned it on one of your episodes about mosquitoes. How there was like, I don't remember which one it was, but the mosquito that shift changes, like it's a creature that shows up as its main form, or one of the forms it'll take is a mosquito, and it'll come in your house.
Yeah. It's called an adze, A-D-Z-E, as a shape-shifting fly. Yeah.
Okay. And it was like a way to caution people around the dangers possibly of malaria. Like, beware of mosquitoes because gang, gang, they could possibly fucking kill you. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, it's not always just a scary story. A lot of it has an actual reason for being communicated to people. It's just that a lot of times a story or a superstition is better tolerated. And also it kind of takes like a, if you think about how a lot of African spirituality had to be hidden, you can see why a lot of things may have been told in the form of a story to make it so that it could be shared whilst not being, something to be punished for. It's kind of like saying, all right, if you mix this, mix that, and do this, this is a spell or a potion or some type of magic that you can do. If you were a slave, if you were an enslaved person, that is not exactly something that you could openly say and not be punished for, perhaps. But if you told it as a story, it might just kind of get brushed off as a fucking story, like many of us do, and a superstition, like don't sweep your feet. But it has ties to something else. I don't particularly know what that one would be, but that was the one that came to mind. So it's just like, it's an automatic rabbit hole for me. And I love a good fucking rabbit hole because my mind lives in rabbit holes. So this is something that I am like, information. And it's just, So what else?
Go ahead. I was going to say, it's good you mentioned it. I mean, I've spoken about it before on the podcast, the whole term called moral vitalism, which is the definition is a tendency to view good and evil as actual forces that exist and can influence people and events. So, you know, you mentioned the ads and the link to malaria and dangers of mosquitoes, making sure you keep your nets up at night, making sure you know someone has been attacked by the ads because they have certain symptoms, which is fatigue, fever, they just seem dead. It also affects the families around. Again, this is just, as I have a healthcare background, and you know, they don't use the word symptoms and they don't use the word contagious, you know, but again, because there wasn't this vernacular that was used in the language, not because they weren't smart or anything, but because you're educating your neighbors and you don't have the jargon to say, these are the symptoms, have a look, this is the contagious period, you know, that you hear now with COVID. It's very much like, if you have, this neighbor had so and so and so, and it affected their family, it was this shape-shifting firefly. And I find it amazing, and there's other examples as well. For example, the Trural, who I believe is from Jamaica, who is a spirit who haunts babies and causes them to die. Sorry, trigger warning.
Like SIDS.
Yeah, essentially, you know, sudden infant death syndrome is essentially that. And that was the explanation for that. You know, she lost her baby, so then she would then go around looking for hers, and then she would wail in the night. And that was SIDS before it was called SIDS, because these things happened before the pathology came to be, before a name came to be. So it is definitely interesting that we have these stories that are still told and that have been written down to explain like certain illnesses. I love it for real.
There are a lot of, and if you think about it, a lot of times stories are used to explain the unexplainable, right? Yeah. If you don't have the lexicon, like you said, if you don't have the vocabulary, if you don't have the words to, or even just the understanding of what it is, right? A lot of things happen, but you don't necessarily understand. You understand the present tense of what's happening. Like, you see it's happening, but you don't understand the cause, right? You don't know the why. How did we get here? Storytelling. You still have to describe to someone what's going on. You're still going to relay to your neighbor or your family member, like, hey, this is what happened to Grace up the block. Well, this is what happened to Patty down the street. And so it's just like, here we are, a story. And then it's like telephone, right? One person tells someone something. Grace is telling her neighbor, Patty is telling her neighbor, it's happened to both of them. So they're telling their families and their friends what's going on. And then at some point, somebody knows somebody. It's like, oh, this just sounds like what happened to Grace. Oh, this sounds like what happened to Patty. And now, and then also people don't always remember all the details. Things get left out. Some people tell better stories than others. Some people are a little more colorful, add a little razzle dazzle, you know what I mean? And it's just like all of a sudden now you've got these grandiose ideas and stories, and you compare and you contrast and you add and you take away, and you've got folklore. But they were based on something that happened, something that you couldn't explain, something that you don't know what it is, but I'm telling you what I'm seeing. Like, I don't necessarily understand all of the pieces that I've been reading in terms of like what hoodoo is. And oh, since I mentioned it again, I had no idea that Zora Neale Hurston was such an anthropological figure. I always just envisioned her as a writer, right? Like, she just wrote a book, Their Eyes Were Watching God, and a ton of other things. I did not know how ingrained in just African-American anthropology she actually was. And she did a lot of works that had influences based on hoodoo. I believe it was, let me find, I think it's on my phone. One of the books that she did, Something in the Mule, was actually her, no, I think it's on the website. Let me see. Oh, here we go. So which website is this?
Yeah, I mean, she's an inspiration for real. I think with my work, I can do this where I would love to continue, or I plan to continue with the short stories that I'm doing, you know, eventually, you know, perhaps make it a collection of stories once I
like an anthology and
and, you know, I am not just getting this stuff out of my head. It's based on research, and I think that's what she's doing basically with the African American just culture, and it's an umbrella because there's so many, please. I'm not generalizing. It's amazing that she's able to do that and be able to be a great author as well.
It was called Mules and Men. So this website is teachrock.org. Zora Neale Hurston, 1891 to 1960, was novelist, folklorist, and anthropologist, Jesus, Lord Father, anthropologist of African-American life. Throughout her career, she wrote extensively on the subject of hoodoo, a blend of folklore, spirituality, and conjuring native to the Deep South. Later in life, Hurston wrote a weekly column entitled Hoodoo and Black Magic that ran from 1957 to 1959 in the Fort Pierce Chronicle, a Florida newspaper. The following is an excerpt from her 1935 novel, Mules and Men. Mules and Men, to my novice surprise, was a lot of work that she had done looking into the history of hoodoo. New Orleans is now and has ever been the hoodoo capital of America. Great names and rites that vie with those of Haiti and deeds that keep alive the powers of Africa. Hoodoo, or voodoo as pronounced by the whites, is burning with flame in America with all the intensity of a suppressed religion. That was just a little excerpt from that writing. I also got my hands on a copy of Every Tongue Got to Confess, Negro Folk Tales from the Gulf, from the Gulf States. Also, another work that you can look into is Barracoon. That was another piece that she did that had a lot of, I guess, hoodoo references in there. But the Every Tongue's Got to Confess, it actually reminds me of like Aesop's Fables. It has a bunch of different stories. And what I liked about it, going through parts of it, was they made a note to the reader, and they're saying that they, I don't know if it was because it was an unpublished work that she had, I guess, started on and just was editing, but they made note to say that a lot of things were left in their original dialect, and their places where she may have had the exact thing written again, but like the way they made note to describe how they transcribed it from its original works. But some of the, like, the table of contents, if you will: God tales, preacher tales, devil tales, witch and haunt tales, heaven tales, John and Massa tales, Massa and white folk tales, tall tales, mosquito and gnat tales, Nita Strick tales, mistaken identity tales, fool tales, woman tales, miscellaneous tales, talking animal tales, and school tales. Like, there were so many different tales, and in them, it seems that there are a couple of different narratives from people that she encountered in these areas. One of the ones that I was remembering that I read was, what was it? Why Black People Don't Have Anything. And what's really sad but interesting about it is that you can also see kind of, one, it's very deprecating, self-deprecating in the book. And I had to remind myself of the time and the context. A lot of the people were referring to Blacks as like niggers with the hard ER. But it's like, that was what everybody referred, you know what I mean? It's just like, well, damn, why we had to do it also. But I get it in terms of if you're in 1927 and you're telling a story, it would make sense that you spoke as someone that lived in that time. And they made note that we ain't changed nothing. We left it as it was. But it's just like reading some of the stories were fucking sad because it's just like, well, he was asleep. And God asked everybody, what do you want? White people was like, we want to be pretty and we want all the things. Jews was like, we want all the money and to do what we want to do. And the nigga was asleep. God came to him and was just like, oh, what you want? And it was just like, we sleep, bro. But then it's just like, okay, so that's one person explaining why they think Black people don't have anything. But also, if you think about it, yes, a nigga would sleep because, bitch, I've been working all fucking day. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm doing the heavy lifting. So pardon me for needing a fucking break. So on the one hand, it's like, damn, bro, like, why we ain't step up? Why we ain't say anything? Why we didn't say what we wanted? But then at the same time, it's kind of like, I kind of get it. I don't know if that was the point.
I get it because, you know, I've seen online where it's like, sometimes our ancestors' biggest wish was rest.
For
a long time. That's why I'm a huge advocate for rest. I will rest hard. And when I say rest hard, it means I will do nothing all day and feel no shame. Because that wasn't the option for our ancestors. I'll say our, because, you know, my people back home in Nigeria, we were subjugated to colonialism, to forced implementation of religion. And that option of being able to say, you know what, no, wasn't there. And, you know, people would just say, oh, you're just resting. And, you know, I've also like heard about people saying, you know, Black people, African Americans were seen as lazy as soon as they stopped working for free, which is what it was. It was free enforced labor for hundreds of years. And all of a sudden, now that you can choose to work, there's suddenly there's welfare babies, there's so and so, and you know more about this than I do. And no, sometimes soft life. Sometimes soft life, basically.
And it's wild because I'm thinking of like my coworkers complaining about, oh, well, where are the breaks for the working people? Here are the breaks for the unemployed or people that don't work. I work all day and I'm struggling. And it's like, yes, sis, I too understand that plight because yes, we work, we bust our ass and we still feel like we don't have all the things we want, right? But think about it. Why the fuck would I break my neck to work a job where I'm only making $32,000 a year in New York fucking city? What the fuck can you get with $32,000 a year in New York city by yourself? Imagine trying to raise a family in the 20 of 22. We're not talking about 95. We're not talking about, you know, 75 or even 2005. It was even harder in 2005. I was working then. But that being what it is, it's just like, for some people, if I go to work, who's watching my kids? Yeah. Why would I pay $1,500 in childcare? At this point, your kids are grown, miss. Your kids are taking care of themselves and working their own jobs. You don't have to worry about childcare costs in 2022. So if you're going to make more money staying home, why the fuck would you go to work? What is the point? Do I work just to have money for childcare, just so that I can go to work and pay for childcare? Why don't I just stay home and watch my own motherfucking kids? so they can go to school. Yeah. And then at that point, it's just like, so how do you explain not working for 5 years? Now people are looking at you like, you're fucking lazy. We don't want you. Mm. You don't have the luxury of being like the stay-at-home mom who gets to say, well, my husband worked and provided for everything. And now I'm deciding to re-enter the workforce. Like, everybody's narrative is a little different. And I really hate that narrative of, oh, these people are lazy, that people are lazy. It's just like, look at the context. Look at what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I breaking my neck and still not, like, we're breaking our neck and barely making it. Why would somebody want to, like, if I'm being assisted, why would I not want that? Mm-hmm. Because the only other options are still struggling. It's always a struggle. Why am I going to work and struggle if I could not work and still struggle?
Road trips give you the flexibility of taking the most control of your itinerary. No airline delays or cancellations. You can sit in your own germs and move at your own pace. Whether you're looking for family-friendly or something romantic, history and heritage, or a foodie's delight, I've got you covered. Choose your trip based on the vibe or the distance you feel like driving. This pack includes DC, Philly, Hartford, Burlington, and Montreal. All destinations are a few hours from New York City, so they're perfect for anyone along the East Coast to tap into. The download also includes a packing list, pre-trip car prep guide, and a playlist of travel and shit road trip content. These itineraries are perfect for travelers who enjoy having a plan with space for spontaneity. Head over to travelandshitpodcast.com/travel resources/road trip to download your copy and take the stress of planning and packing off the table while you focus on the road.
That's another way that stories kind of change themselves, is like that personal narrative, right? So now imagine someone that works hard and is still struggling, and then someone who doesn't work and is still struggling. The same story is going to be told differently by these two different people because of their own personal thought process and why they see things the way they do. So their own context is colored into a story.
Yeah, so it changes the narrative.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I really think that when we travel, it is important to consider not just the story, but the storyteller. So in Guadeloupe, when I did my Black History tour, it was a great tour, had a great day. It was one of those custom trips. Those are my favorite kinds of trips where you can hire somebody and they say, well, what is it that you want to do? Here are your options. We could go to, like, one was like a black sand beach, one was like a nature walk, one was, I did two different ones. Two different tour guides, tour groups, if you will. And it was just me on the tour, which was my perfect kind of tour, personal fave. Yes. And then the one that I did with Ben and Katya was Black History on the Island. And I think we ended up surfing at the end of the day, which wasn't necessarily included. And then something else, I think we did like a rum distillery tour. So it was like a piecemeal. You get to choose the things that you did. I say all that to say, I was a little hesitant going into it because here I have these two whites telling me about Black history in an island that neither one of them was born on.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So it's like, you are doing the same Google searching that I could do. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Ben. He had his little notebook, you know what I mean? We've written down little points of reference and he's taking me around to all of the different Black sites that had some type of historical reference, and he did an incredible job. But that personal connectivity to the stories isn't there. One, you're not from the island. Two, you are a white man. So it's like, when you're doing these tours, when you go places, you kind of got to keep those things in mind. While the history of a place is its history, who is telling the history is absolutely going to matter. The same story can be delivered to you six different ways by two different people. And it all depends on what their experience would have been, what side of the narrative they would have been on. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like a malicious thing. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't find that there was any malice in there, but if this white man starts asking other white men or women about, well, what kind of places should I look into, or what should I include on this? Studied or not, it's different than someone who is from the island, whose family is from the island, who's lone, oral traditions and oral histories outside of what the internet has. I know I got a shirt from Columbia, Let a Black Man Tell You Black History. And that was because it was, I'm trying to think of, I don't know if it was Afro-Cuban root. No, that was Cuba. I know it was it Marlon? No, it wasn't Marlon. I know Chris was one of the tour guys. It's when I went to Palenque and did that tour of Black history in Colombia. They have a community, Palenque, over in Colombia where the slaves ran away to, and it is still occupied by descendants of slaves from Colombia that live there. So everyone there is a direct descendant. And I believe that you have to like show proof, or you have to be able to document your lineage from someone to live or be in, you know, like long-term in that community. Wow. I don't remember the exact terms of that, but yes, you have to consider the person telling the story to kind of understand the context or the light or the lean angle of the story that you're going to hear. And it's
for sure. I mean, I feel that way when I, especially now that I'm writing, I feel that way a lot more, because, you know, I'd have a character who is the main character, sometimes antagonist, not always, of the story, and it won't be from where I'm from Nigeria. So I do definitely, I have to research when I'm writing. So I'm writing one now, who is it about? It's about the silk cotton tree, which is everywhere, but I'm sort of basing it based on the tree in Jamaica, but the tree is also in, I believe, in southern American states, North America, and also in Ghana as well. Just this tree that is the home of many spirits. Yes. And the origins are, I think it was a Dutch or Spanish slave master who told the slave to bury its treasure by this tree and then kill the slave. The slave spirit would forever guard that treasure. So if anyone tries to, even now, cut down the tree, then
they'll be haunted forever.
Yeah, haunted, killed.
I've heard of that before.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm doing that, writing a story about that now. And I definitely have to think, okay, this story isn't set in Nigeria. I need to make sure I get things right. So if I'm saying so-and-so are walking through a forest, which forest is it?
Okay.
Because I want to make sure that's right. It's definitely something I think about. And when you were talking, I was like, oh yeah, that's also me too. She's at me as well, to be fair. I'm Black, but I think there needs to be a lot more sensitivity when these things, when stories are being told. I like to get sources from people who are like, from Black people mostly. It's hard sometimes because a lot of these things weren't written down.
Yes. But
that's also why I'm doing this now, because maybe one day my story will be a source for someone else's research or essay. And yeah, definitely sensitivity when it comes to storytelling is key.
I absolutely and wholeheartedly agree. And it's making me think of a project I started a few years ago. And actually, I started the project, I think I was in high school. I don't know if I was in high school or if I was in college, but I'll never forget. I had a little tape recorder, and what the fuck was the project? I ended up, it actually might've been like for a senior thesis. Now I got to try to dig all that shit out. I hope you didn't like, my mother has cleaned my room from childhood, like so many times. Like I wonder how much of my shit from like high school and college is still there, but I ended up recording my grandma's best friend, Grandma McKinney. Florence McKinney, she was my English teacher in high school. I mean, in elementary school. And I've known her my entire life. And I remember going over to the house and I recorded her telling me about fashions from when she was my age. So we were talking about, because I think I did like fashion and something, which is wild because I'm not a fashion girl by any sense of the means. I like nice things, but I love the artistic expression of fashion. I love how fashion tells your personal story. I enjoy the story. I love stories. I love storytelling. And I really and truly love the way fashion has a unique way to tell those stories without having to speak, right? And I don't know if I realized that then, but I remember I started and I recorded her telling me these stories, and she has since passed and I have no clue where that tape is. And I did the same thing with my grandparents, because I know my grandparents aren't going to be here. I know none of my family, I'm not going to be here forever, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's about the oral traditions, the oral narratives, the stories of our ancestors, of our elders, that you don't want to get lost, right? And it's a matter of, a lot of times you'll have your grandparents or people in your family, just elders, people of your age, whatever. They tell you the same fucking stories over and over and over again. And my grandparents were good for telling like the same four stories. But there's so much of their lives that I have no point of reference for, right? Like, I'd heard a lot of those, what I didn't know were hoodoo superstitions or hoodoo beliefs, like passed down to me. And in honesty, as many times as I would try to ask my grandparents, like, well, so what was your experience with Jim Crow? Like, what was your, because both of my grandfathers have since passed. And I'm very glad that I recorded them asking them questions like, well, what's a story of your life that you would want to tell my kids, like your great grandkids, or what's something, a message that you would want them to know? I'm glad I did it.
Oh, bless you. Yeah.
But
it's important. It really is.
I say all that to say, a lot of times, a lot of them don't know a lot of things. And so in listening to the stories that they would tell, sometimes you have to go back with hindsight. And they'll tell it as a story because it's something that they lived.
Yeah.
But then you, as the third party, they can kind of go back and piece together things and take things out of it and then apply it to the context of where they lived, when they lived, and the different kinds of lives that they had. Because I remember, as a Black American, I know that my parents were still born in segregation. My parents were born in the 50s. So they were born and raised in a world where they were technically not allowed to go to integrated schools, and they didn't have civil rights until, you know, like the rights that they had just weren't codified. They weren't put into practice in a lot of places. However, while my grandparents were born in the South, they were raised in the North. So they had very Northern experiences.
Yeah.
So while I'm expecting there to be more like strife and like drama in their stories, it's like when they tell their stories, they don't necessarily talk about it that way. And it was very weird to me. I would try to ask them. It's just like, well, I feel like my grandmother was like, yeah, my school was mixed. And I'm like, really? Like, you was in school like in the 40s? And she was like, yeah, but I lived in New York. My grandma came to New York when she was 7. Like, her family moved from South Carolina very early. And my grandfather ended up coming to New York when he was 13. He had a very traumatic reason for coming. Like, he got kicked out because he was the first dark-skinned baby. But yeah, it was like he was one of like 13, give or take. And he just was treated like shit. And so he left and he moved to the North with his sister. And what's wild is my grandpa's like my complexion. But his siblings that were older were very light skinned. You know what I mean? So it was just like he had a really rough kind of go at it. But then they were both in New York for a lot of their developmental years. And my grandfather, as a man, had a lot more, like, you know, men more so have to provide for themselves. Not that women don't have to, but especially then it was different. Like, you're expecting a man to go out. He worked on the railroad. Like, he worked low on the railroad. He ended up doing MTA and provided a wonderful life, wonderful in context, you do the best you can, for his family. But it was just like, so I understand the hardships in that sense. And I remember he would tell me about the guys on his job, like the white guys, what are you reading for? You don't need to read a book. You don't need to learn anything. Like, he taught himself basically to read and write. And then he ended up going back and getting like his GED as an adult so that he could finish high school. So it's like, he had a really interesting story. So it's like, the part of the struggle that you're expecting to hear may not necessarily come out the way you envision it. Because I think a lot of times people will either tell their story softer or a little harder. I think you also have to remember who is telling the story and maybe why they're telling you the story. A lot of people don't want to necessarily reflect on the ills and the shit in their life, you know? And then a lot of times when you go through something, your idea of normal makes something seem like, well, it was normal. No, girl, that's abuse. You know what I mean? Like if you ever look on Twitter and those threads where people are like, oh yeah, you know, this and that, the third, blah, 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 my mother, this TikTok, and that, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, I'm sorry that happened to you. And they're laughing about it. And it's just, so I think a lot of times it can serve us in terms of just acquiring more information to look a little bit beyond just what the story is and apply context. Who is telling it? Why are they telling it? At what point in their life are they telling it? Something that happened a year ago, a month ago, is going to be told differently than something that happened 20 years ago, 60 years ago. So I think that like all of those little factors matter in the stories and the narratives that we understand. And one of the things I like to remind everybody every week, travel is so much more than vacation. And you can gain so much from the communities and the people of the different places that you visit, whether they be international, local, nearby, far away. I was just saying last week, I couldn't give a tour of my neighborhood. I don't know shit about Southside. I just live here. You know what I mean? And it's just like, if I go on the internet and start Googling things to do in South Jamaica or things to do here, I'm going to get like a timeout, or I'm going to get, you know what I mean? Or I'm going to get like a... I don't want to take a popular source. I don't want like the New York Times to tell me what to do. I want like By the Fire podcast to tell me, what do you do in your neighborhood? I want someone that looks like me, someone that sounds like me, someone that I have common or assumed similar interests or experiences to tell me about a neighborhood. So it's kind of like, I feel as if the best way for me to get a feel of something is to dive in and ask people that are from there. But it also depends on who you ask, but you can gain so much by random conversations. Doesn't even have to be a tour guide. Talk to your barista, talk to your cashier. Taxi drivers have given me like the best conversation, you know what I mean? And given me like the best tips. One dude was like, well, what time do you want me to pick you up? And I was like, no, you know, I don't know what, you know, so he's like, so before it gets dark, right? And I'm like, oh, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. You're telling me that I don't need to be here past a certain time. So then it's like, okay, so what time do you think I should get picked up? He's like, I'll be here at 5. I'll be here at 4:45. You know what I mean? So let's make that 4:45. If you feel away, someone that doesn't know me, that doesn't know anything about me or what my capabilities are, I could be super, you know what I mean? But just he's just like, you're a woman by yourself in this community. You don't need to be here. And I take your word for that. You know what I mean? So I ask questions, have conversations. It's really one of those things that can enrich you, because I think you can learn something from anyone if you ask the right questions. And you just got to be open to listening. Stories are so prevalent in other places, whether they are similar stories, different stories, like they're there to be told. You just gotta, receive them.
For sure. And I think there's also, which we haven't talked about, the stories that are just there to entertain.
Ooh.
That are just there to, they don't have a message. It might have something thought provoking, but really it's just there to say, I've got something to say. I mean, I was reading one called The Two Johns, which is also from Louisiana. And it's about, again, two brothers, Big John, Little John. And Big John, you know, has the charisma, has a partner. Little John is quiet, introverted, is by himself. But he seems to have this magical ability where everything works in his favor. And obviously, Big John has that jealousy of, you know, oh, Little John sold his horse and was able to get all this money. Why don't I sell my horse? And then what Big John doesn't know is that Little John sort of has this magical element about himself where coincidences happen so that he didn't get all this money by selling the horse. He's kind of a trickster in that sense. And then it ends up with Big John eventually like just dying, because even though this kind of has a message, but when I was reading it, it just entertained me because I wanted to see what's next.
Yeah,
you know. And what I loved about the story, and it's part of the anthology by Virginia Hamilton, which is called
I Came Across Her Also.
Yes, the people could fly American yes. Black Folktales. Yes.
She does a lot of children's books.
Yes, and you can access that book online, actually. I will find the link and share it to you so you can share it
mm-hmm.
to everyone. And you can get it for free as well online. And it's just the whole idea that even as adults, we just want to hear something
yes.
outrageous. You know, you work, I work, we have pretty normal lives, but you don't really hear about like magic day to day. And sometimes you just want to hear, oh, what's going to happen next? And when you have these stories with Black faces.
Yes.
Not that you can resonate in the sense that, yeah, my neighbor has this magical trick and my mm-hmm. neighbor's a trickster, but it just makes you feel warm inside that we are involved in a narrative that's normal. Like, you have a person who's kind of annoying. You know people, family, friends who are, you know, praised, who are seen mm-hmm. as big almighty.
The golden child.
Right. And sadly, media doesn't show it in the point of view of like Black people, which
yeah.
then alienates us and makes us seem exotic, that we only face racism and we only face so-and-so. It's like, no.
Adversity, like, such struggle lives that we're right. all just like, oh, I made it through. It's like, no, mm-hmm. I had a pretty good life. Like, you yeah. know, like,
yeah,
I was happy. I had a great childhood.
You know, and like sometimes the biggest problem of the day is that the bus came late.
Mm-hmm.
And that set up a whole cascade of events. And that's what I really loved about the story. It was just, yeah, it was magical, but it just ignites the child in you
mm-hmm.
when reading. And I think that's what I want to do. That's what I love about making this and the podcast, is that I research and I say these stories and I'm writing, and I am like switching off any logic in my brain.
Mm.
I'm writing this stuff, and I'm writing this current book about the tree, and you know, there's a face in the tree. Mm. And I'm just like, I don't know where this is coming from. I'm like on the bus and I'm seeing trees. I'm in right now where I'm staying, a lot of nature. And I just think, yeah, what does that look like? What is that? Like, I see the bark, and I'm getting into detail. Goodness, stop me if you want to. But
no, please keep going. No, I love trees.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm looking at them, and I'm just like, what if I just saw a face one day in these lines?
Mm-hmm.
And how would I feel? How would that character feel? And that's me switching on my creativity and switching off any logic. And not enough people do that, and we don't see enough of Black people being able to be like,
just play, use imagination.
Yeah. I mean, what I really enjoyed about Jordan Peele's recent film Nope was, you know, just the whole like idea of Black people being like, nah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, we're not a monolith. There are going to be mm-hmm. people who, and we joke about how, you know, white people be doing that, splitting up and going into different parts.
Yeah.
I know Black people who will say, yeah, why don't we split up and look for clues? And you think, is that a good idea? But at the end of the day, it's not a race thing, that some people will just want to be inquisitive. They want to be curious. And that's why, like, I'm doing these stories. I'm making these characters who wouldn't do the typical, nah, not involved, nope. Mm-hmm. I would, that's me. But that isn't
everybody. My character.
That isn't everybody. And I think I just want more for like Black people being able to see themselves as like just people, and yeah. we know we're people. And I'm not even here for trying to persuade others that we're people, but I think being able to have that self empowerment and that self acknowledgement that yeah, we are multifaceted, and yeah, it's just, that's what I love about, that's one thing I wanted to mention about storytelling, just the mundane, the mm-hmm. play that's involved as yeah. well.
I cannot wait yeah. to read that story. Please make sure you send me that, because we are a tribe. When I tell you, I've got a whole like album on my phone of me just touching trees, Like whenever I try something about trees, well, it's not even something about trees. I know exactly what it is that I enjoy the, I told you I like history, right? So trees have been here for so fucking long. Pieces that just exist. And something like a tree absolutely absorbs the things around it. It lives off of the rain. It lives off of the soil. It absolutely absorbs. And I think trees hold energy also. They are living beings. Why wouldn't they hold energy, right? I just always enjoy, especially like sometimes like a tree just talks to me, if that makes sense. Not in a very literal sense. But it's just like the energy of a tree, like of a really huge fucking tree. You know, that bitch has been here for so long. I just always tell myself little stories, or I envision or imagine like what all has happened that this tree got to live through. Right. If there was a tree on like I remember one of the spots in Guadeloupe had, there were two trees in particular. There was one where it was just mammoth. And I really like the picture that they got for me. It's probably not going to show, but it's, I look so little. Just like, and the picture is just all tree. And I'm just right here. And it's like, that tree has been that for so many other people. Like, what are the stories of those people? Like, who snuck away and ran away here to meet a lover that never showed up, right? Or who snuck away here to hide from somebody that, you know, they did not want to be betrothed to or something. Like there are so many fantastical little stories in my mind, even just like natural occurrences, you know what I mean? Like the storms and hurricanes and things that may have like completely torn away and demolished like communities around them, but that, that tree lived through it. There was a huge tree that was in the middle of what was supposed to be a jail. And it's one of my favorite clips because I think I said, is this it? Touching Shit. Yeah, this is the Touching Shit album. It's not gonna
I love that.
Pop up. I don't think
I mean
you can't see it from there.
I did a solo trip to Vietnam in 2019. Yeah, when I was studying abroad, and there was this huge tree, and I forget the history, but it's huge, and it, I think the whole premise of it, it was near a temple. And it says, you know, if you touch it, there's something to do with like Buddhism. It may, dare I say, oh gosh, let me not say this if this is wrong. I think this might be wrong. I was going to say
it's wrong for being wrong. It's okay.
Yeah, I might. Someone's. It may have been the tree that I don't know if it was Siddhartha, the first Buddha, or it was like just a, an important figure rested on that tree. I feel like it was the tree that the first Buddha rested, and then Buddhism came about. What was it in that country? Because if it wasn't, then I'm in trouble.
And even if it wasn't that country, right, it happened somewhere. That actual tree exists somewhere, right? Like imagine even like morbid, sad, heartbreaking history, like the trees that held bodies, right? The trees that hold secrets. Like think of all the stories and the secrets that trees absolutely possess. There are tons of people who lost their lives hanging from fucking trees, and those trees absorb all of that shit. You know what I mean? And it's, those people had stories, they had families, they were people in and of themselves outside of the horrible things that happened to them. And I just feel like something as traumatic as losing your life in that spot, it's like that energy is not going anywhere. That's not fucking going anywhere. And it's one of those things where I just, I personally just can't wait to just have a lot of land, a lot of space. Surf water. Was it in here?
That was India, by the way, guys. I'm so sorry. That was India. But it was an important tree. And, you know, I definitely give it a good feel. And yeah, I definitely need to be more in touch with history. And just whilst I was researching just about trees for this book, it was found that, you know, once you cut down a tree and you see the tree stump and the lines in the tree, within the tree stump, those lines tell you things. Like they've been, you can research those lines and it tells you about the climate of the area because the rainwater and everything. And they're very interesting. I can imagine you know much more about trees, and
Yeah, I don't.
No, but I hope you enjoy it, and I want to release it definitely this in the next week. But yeah, I'm having fun writing about it as well.
I'm gonna post. I found the video. Like, I'm gonna post it on my stories or something on social. But I'll post that for you guys so that after you hear the episode, you can see the. I have it saved as witch squadetry. I think I said some shit like, if I were a witch, this would be my shit. Like, I'd get busy right here. Like, the tree was fucking incredible. Like, just the roots, like the whole system of, like, these are just roots for the tree. I don't know if you can see it in here, but like, that's me just sitting up here in the middle of like the tree. And it's just fucking insane and gorgeous. And it was in the middle of what used to be like a prison. So it's just like, imagine the people just like being stuck here. Or the type of people that were there, what if they practiced some kind of like spell or ritual or something? It's just certain areas just have that energy that like, oh, you could get busy here. Like this, like this is got like energy is a thing, right? Like when you look, think about all of like this, I love a good supernatural movie or a show or whatever. So think about all of the different rituals that need energy. Like what was the show? Was it Vampire Diaries? Or it was in that vampire world between Vampire Diaries originals and what's the one with the little girl? I can't think of it. It'll come to me. But I know that a lot of the witches in the originals had to stay in Louisiana to practice their magic because it's source magic. Like they actually, their power originated being from like on the land their ancestors practiced on, and that's why their magic continued to work, because they practiced it there. They were very powerful there, and once they leave there, it's just like it was either diluted or they couldn't practice, or like their powers weren't the same or something like that. And then there were things like different spells and different what was the fuck? Legacies. There we go. Legacies. Like even for certain magical devices to work, you have to have like the solar eclipse, or you have to have some kind of, not cataclysmic, but like some really big high energy. You need a lot of power. So it has to be on this day with the full moon, with this, have all these things have to align, because energy is real. Energy is a thing. You could only do it on these hallowed grounds or on this ground because it had all of that. And it's just all those things being part of stories. It's not just magic and witches and werewolves and vampires. Like,
no, but it's, you know, it's astronomy as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we people study the stars, and there's some people believe in the links, but not even thinking about astrology, but just astronomy itself.
Yeah.
And it links to, there's a story of the succubus from Dominican Republic called the Ciguapa, which guapa means pretty in Spanish. Shout out to my college Spanish. And basically the only way you can capture her is by like tracking her during a full moon. Okay. And my guess is, again, this that whole link of the full moon always having some sort of supernatural connections. Mm-hmm. You know, you have werewolves on a full moon. You have this example as well, where you need that moon elemental to be in its full shape. And I think as well, because it's not something that happens every day. You don't have a full moon every day.
Nope. Even now, it's a limited window.
A full moon. And even now, it's
you've seen it. So even things in terms of like I went through an era where I was very big into like metaphysical spirituality, crystals, stones, and saging and all of that. And I still have a lot of the a lot of my crystals, and I just don't use them often, but one of the ways to clean your crystals was just to set them out in a full moon, or to use moon water, watering your plants with moon water. Like I would just set out jars of water under the full moon, and the moon would charge your waters, or the moon would charge your crystals. And it's just, there are so many little innocuous everyday things that people for ages have used in magic, have used in just strengthening spirituality. And it's got to mean something. Like, and I don't think that my lack of understanding or my lack of being able to prove it makes it any less true. I've always been one of those people that is easy to believe in the fanatical and the fantastical. I'm just a very creative and curious person. And those things just resonate with me because I feel like this world is too fucking big for what we see to be it. You know, there was no way that Galileo could do all of his research without being a little fucking fanatical, without thinking that, you know what? This ain't it. Yeah, there's gotta be something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like all of the people who made major discoveries that we have been able to like build upon now was fucking crazy at some point. Yeah. You know what I mean? This was all electricity. Who would have thought this could be a thing? Just power running through a wall and we've got lights.
Yeah. I mean,
running
the ideal,
water.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of cells is crazy.
I do not understand it. I'm not going to.
The same thing that make, like, I know we have plant cells and animal cells, and you said you love science, so let's get into it. But like, the whole idea that we are actually made up of like super tiny particles, and there's a reason why there's solids and there's liquids and there's air, and
we are the universe. That Neil deGrasse Tyson, or I think that's it is, the Black Scientist. Yeah, He's got a couple of different series through the streaming platforms. And one of them we watch, I can't remember exactly what the name of it was, but it's like, we are the universe, right? It's like, we're made of the same atoms, the same things that the rest of the galaxy is made of. Like, we are all as bigly and as small as the biggest and the smallest things in the world. And it is just incredible to me. And it's just so fantastical, but so very true. And I don't understand the fucking science of it. I don't know why these little atoms don't let me just like push my finger through. I don't get it. I don't understand the science, but here it is, my finger not going through. My finger is here. My hand is here. The two things exist outside of me understanding it, right? Mm-hmm. So what is to say that a lot of the stories that we hear from people, a lot of the cultural customs and the norms of different people across the world, just because we don't fucking understand it, we don't see it, or we don't get it, or it's not our practice, doesn't mean that it's not real, that it doesn't exist, and that for many people that it doesn't fucking work. Like, I mean, so many possibilities.
I mean, if we like extend it to health and healthcare,
yeah,
a lot of like medicines obviously had the origins of like herbal origins,
yes,
and then science allows it to then, you know, we can extract the active ingredient, and then that's then is used as medicine. Instead of having a whole tree for one pill, we can
have
pills galore, basically. And you know, that I was researching this a bit earlier about just the whole supernatural of natural healing that comes from like fish. So you know, like Yoruba people in like Nigeria see like catfish, for example, to be used for TB, laxatives, and gonorrhea. And you know, some people might say, oh, where does that come from? But then at the same time, in healthcare, we always advocate, or one should advocate, for lifestyle changes first. So you have a certain like condition, not to get all like TMI, but if someone had like constipation, for example, like fiber, you know, you're not gonna throw on like, take this active ingredient drug.
Yeah.
How about you start with the stuff that you need to be eating? And I love that we have that came from somewhere. That came from a culture of people saying, this person's tried this many times and it's helped them.
Yeah.
Why don't we continue it on? And
just using what you have, the world, everything that is already. The world is what it is, whether or not we know it, whether or not we've actively been able to tap into it, whether or not we found all the uses for the things. Like, it's all here. It's just a matter of being open-minded enough to think outside of what things are made for. Plenty of medications were used for one thing, and then, oh, surprise, we find that it's actually better used for treating X, Y, and Z. So it's also there, what healthcare and health and medicine isn't what it was. What it is now is one thing, but 50, 100, and 500 years ago, it was at very rudimentary levels. And a lot of times I would still say very advanced, because honestly, I can't think of whose bright idea was it to eat this berry, or whose bright idea was it to try using this for that. Like, we were watching Prey. I don't know if you've watched it. It's like the prequel to the Predator series. It's on Netflix. It is so fucking good. If y'all haven't watched it yet, highly recommend. 11 out of 10. Very good. What I appreciate about it is following an Indigenous woman and the original arrival of the predator in like the, on the earth, on the planet earth, mm-hmm. right? And she is very well-versed in, is it herbology? What is like the study of like herbs, like just using herbs and just, she's an Indigenous person. She is like years and I don't know what the time frame was, but it was around the time that the French trackers, so maybe 1700s, I guess, if the American school system is serving me well. It's probably not. But that being said, like that's apparently the region it was in because there were French trappers that were a part of the movie. That being what it is, she used a lot of plant medicine. And it has always struck me as fascinating. Like, how did you figure that out? Like, did you watch an animal eat it first or ingest it first? Did you watch the way animals used different plants or ate different things? And then how that worked? Because I mean, you're tracking and paying attention to what is going on around you because you don't want your village to be attacked or you don't want your children to be out and about looking, scavenging and hunting or getting water or whatever. And some random animal takes them out. You know what I mean? So you're paying attention to a lot of things differently. So I get how some of that information can be gathered, but at the same time, it's just always been so fascinating to me that it's here. Mm-hmm. It grows. It has been given to us. We just don't necessarily, one, listen to some of the people who know what they're talking about, who are often considered just far-fetched or don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the ways modern medicine kind of dismisses not apothecary. Practices. Thank you. Traditional practices is kind of like, well, what do you think are in these pills? Like stuff that started out being modern, but from a different time. Mm-hmm. So it's just, there's so many different ways to take this conversation. There's so many points of reference and tie-ins and just thank you. Yeah. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate you having me here because this is definitely something I didn't want to talk to a wall about. I wanted someone else to have this conversation with and someone that knew what they were talking about. So where can the people find you? What other than this story about the tree that I am very anxiously awaiting, are you working on and how can we support you?
Oh, thank you. No, thank you for having me. First of all, before I plug myself, I just want to say it's been amazing being on here and listening to you as well, because I'm trying to travel more and your perspective as like an avid traveler has been like a lot to me, because when you were talking about, you know, speaking to the locals, you know, I'm traveling recently to a city where I scored in, but I didn't really live in, I didn't really take in not just the sights, but just the nature around. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm definitely inspired to really just like, whoever I know who lives there, just ask them, you know, what have they been doing? And yeah, so thank you so much. So where to find me? By the Fire Podcast on Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcast, YouTube. Have a listen. They're short, sweet episodes. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, BytheFire_pod. I also have a website, bythefirepodcast.com, where I have all the resources I use. It's not all me, so it's
love a good source.
Yeah, it's always good to give credit where credit is due. And my Ko-fi, where if you want to support monthly or just one-off donations, is really appreciative, because now I've got on my wish list the eyes were watching God.
That's yeah.
So that's on my wish list. I want to get it next. So support the ting. Yes, thank you so much for having me, for real.
And thank you for being here with me. I will, of course, have the link to your Ko-fi and especially your website, because I'm sure your website has a link to all the different places to listen to the podcast, as well as finding your social handles in lieu of like 13 links. I will put the link to your website and specifically to your Ko-fi also, so that we can get y'all that book. So guys, remember, travel is so much more than vacation. Talk to the people around you. Interact with actual humans and people and listen to their stories. Ken, thank you so much for joining me. And I absolutely highly suggest you guys check out Ken's podcast, By the Fire Podcast, and tap in to the stories around you. All right, guys. See y'all next week. Bye.